It's like getting married, Nathan.
Careful now.
Exceptionally brilliant. For a lot of people, Mbappe has that quality.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quick start car insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at GetsetGo.ie.
Daniel Harris, good morning to you. How are you?
Good, thanks. Hi, everyone.
Yeah, how's your tournament been so far?
It's been a bit of a slow start, hasn't it? I think that the problem that we've got is it 36 matches to eliminate 8 teams means that there's not the same level of jeopardy that you would usually want. So just before, you were talking about how the tournament starts tonight with France and Germany, and like you guys, I can't wait for that game, but it doesn't really matter that much who wins.
Does it not matter a little bit because of where you finish in the group? I mean, I know nobody thinks about this that this early in the tournament, but actually, if you are smart, you want to win this group and try and avoid England.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it does matter to win the group, but you can also come third in the group. And you look at it the other way around. For England, they probably want to come second in their group. And coming second in the group at the World Cup was one of the reasons they got to the semi-finals in the end. So I think that it is difficult to decide exactly what's going to happen at this point. But what I mean is that France and Germany will play a game. One team will win, one team will lose, or it will be a draw. But the reality is that we're going to probably see both of them and Portugal in the next round, whatever happens. And at that point, you've got to win 3 games to get to the final. And obviously, you'd prefer to have an easier one. But if you have a difficult one, you'd expect that. And the tournament, the knockouts should be brilliant. But the group stages, it feels like it's more about just enjoying the fact that there is football to be played 3 times a day than the football that we're actually going to watch is spectacular.
The only thing I'd say is that I think the football has been pretty good so far. Like, I understand the point you're making about there being less jeopardy. And yet, in a weird way, because so few teams are going out, imagine being one of those teams who goes out. Like, how crap would you feel to be one of the few teams that has to go home at the end? Like, you know, we've been there at international tournaments. We know what that's like. So
not in this format, even Ireland.
Like, no, yeah.
The last time they did this format, I think, was Mexico 86, where Scotland managed to go out at that point. They're in a group with, I think, Germany, Denmark and Uruguay, which was the group of death at that point. So, I mean, it was a bit of a difficult one. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I understand totally that you don't want to go out. And what you see is the game that you saw last night, for example, which probably one of the games I've enjoyed the most so far, Sweden against Spain, because Sweden basically think, well, if they get a draw out of that, then they feel that they're almost there because they will get the points they need off the other teams that are in the group. But that was actually an enjoyable game because that was kind of like, you feel like what a tournament game sometimes will look like, where you've got an obvious favourite who aren't quite able to find a way against a really well-organised team who are also quite good. And that was why I really enjoyed that game.
Yeah, I think sometimes we forget about the joy of the group stages because obviously not that much ends up getting written about the group stages, not that much, except in Ireland, in terms of nostalgia happens about group stages, whereas actually, you know, loads of stuff happens and we just blah, blah, blah away because of the drama that's coming in the quarterfinals and the penalty shootout.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that you always remember when you watch these tournaments is the best team in the group stages is very rarely the team that wins it at the end.
Let's talk a little bit about Portugal because you've been writing about Bruno for The Guardian and we have today, assuming he starts and doesn't pick up an injury in the warm-up, Ronaldo becoming the first player to play in 5 Euros and his longevity, all that kind of stuff, and the beginning of some murmurings about maybe the team is ready to move on from 18 months out from a World Cup. It's going to be very interesting to see if he can make it all the way to Qatar, and I presume he will. But what's your take on how the team is progressing and Bruno's role within that at the moment?
I think that the problem that almost the Portugal have is a similar problem to England. They've just got so many good players. How on earth do you get them all in? Because they'll want some midfield control, and so they'll play a holder, probably Ruben Neves, and then they'll play Bruno, but then they've also got Bernardo, and they've got... So that might be their 3, or they might play a 4. And then up front, how do you pick from Ronaldo, Andre Silva, Diego Jota, and João Felix? I think that Ronaldo will start, but what we'll probably see through the tournament is we'll see a lot of substitutions and we'll probably see quite a few changes as well, partly because the players are knackered and partly because it's quite warm. And Portugal in particular, they have difficult games, so that it's not like they're not going to be able to coast through any of their games in a way that some of the other teams might, which sometimes works quite well because you have players who have got momentum and who are competing. And that tends to be the best preparation for competing is competing. I'm not quite sure how they'll do it. I think they'll play Ronaldo to begin with, but it wouldn't be entirely surprising if he was usurped by João Félix at some point.
Over the course of this tournament?
I think that's possible. I mean, you always think it depends how it goes. If Ronaldo starts scoring goals, then of course he'll stay in the team. But if Portugal struggle, then the manager's going to have a decision to make because on the one hand, no one wants to be the guy that dropped Ronaldo. Graham Taylor's always remembered for taking off Gary Lineker for Alan Smith when England got knocked out at Euro 92. And people thought that was a ridiculous decision because England needed a goal. So why did he take off their best striker who never played for England again? That was it. But at the same time, if you're not scoring and you're a striker, then you might well get taken off because I guess he felt that England just wanted to whack it long. So they put on Alan Smith. And Portugal don't have those kind of options. They have much more international quality options. And I don't think that Ronaldo will be exempt because everyone knows that he's on the way down. He's nowhere near the player he was even a year ago. He's still good, but he's not undroppable. The problem with dropping Ronaldo these days is the politics. It's not, is he someone who you could legitimately replace with a different player who might do something else to you?
Bruno Fernandes has played 68 games this season for both club and country. Like he surely comes into this tournament a little bit knackered, Daniel, to say the least. Is his role going to be different, do you suspect, than the role that we see from Manchester United?
Yeah, I think so. For Portugal, he usually plays as an 8 rather than as a 10. I don't know how much it matters to the actual running around he does because he runs, I think there's only a handful of players that ran more than him in the Premier League last season. He does run around like a nutter, even though he plays as number 10. But yeah, he can. The reason why United, I think, play him as a number 10 is not because they don't think he can play as number 8. It's that he's so good at making goals happen that United need him to be in that position. Whereas Portugal it's a little bit different because they have Bernardo Silva as well. They have another attacking midfield player who can put in a shift. And they have Ronaldo, who's probably not going to do that much running up front, that much pressing. So they probably need Bruno to do a little bit more running up and down, a little bit more shuttling. But I think he will play a different role. But I'm going to feel ridiculous as I say this, but he's 40-1 to be top scorer. I think the reality is that it will be Lukaku because he'll be able to fill his boots in the group stages. I'm not sure how far Belgium are going to get. Feel like this tournament's come probably a couple of years too late for Belgium. But he is someone that does score in lots of games. So 40-1 seemed like good odds for Bruno to be top scorer. But he will be playing slightly deeper probably.
Can he nudge Ronaldo off penalties?
That's the problem.
Yeah, good luck with that, old boy. I did think about that when I thought about that. And yeah, you're unlikely to nudge Ronaldo off penalties, it's true. But if you can hang around for 90 minutes of every game, hard to see Ronaldo playing that much more than 70 in some of these.
Ronaldo was saying that he doesn't necessarily care too much about Ali Day's record, but surely he does, Daniel. Surely everything we know about Ronaldo would suggest that to become the greatest international goal scorer of all time is right up there on his priority list.
I'm sure the main thing that he wants is he wants to retain the Euros. And he did. Portugal basically won it because of him last time, even though he managed to get injured in the final. So I'm sure he would want that record, but I'm sure that, yeah, he would not say that he wanted that record at this point. But as you say, nothing that we know about Ronaldo suggests that this latest aspect of personal glory is something that he won't want to achieve. And I mean, that's understandable. If the desire for personal glory is what's driven him to drive his teams to win all the trophies that they've won, then you have to say that it works.
Is it a bit strange that we're entertaining this conversation about Ronaldo being dropped? Like it is being spoken about quite a bit and it has been a talking point. But like given the season that he's had, like top scorer in Serie A, this is not necessarily a player who is totally on the wane. This is not a player who, if it was somebody else, you would be considering not starting given his goal-scoring record.
I think that he's just become a remorseless goal-scorer. And for some teams, that is enough. And the way that other teams are organised, they require something different. Good example is actually probably Ruud van Nistelrooy at United. When he became someone who just scored goals, the team deteriorated and Fergie got rid of him quite soon after that and replaced him with a star who was not as good a player, but he was more dynamic, and that was what that team needed at that point. So I think with Ronaldo that he'll start to begin with because he's in the team and he's in possession, and who will want the fuss of dropping Ronaldo? They'll hope that he gets off to a good start against Hungary, a game that Portugal are going to not assume they're going to win, but they're definitely going to assume they're going to win because of the games that are coming next, and they're better than Hungary, and hope that Ronaldo can score. And then in the coming games, the games against Germany and France are going to be harder. So I think that what will happen is they'll start Ronaldo because they'll want the chances to drop to him. But if they require a more dynamic option, then they'll either put someone up front alongside him if they haven't played a diamond to begin with, which they might, or they'll take him off. I think that Ronaldo won't expect to play 90 minutes of every game because he knows what the situation is. He'll know physically that he can't do as much as he could before, and he'll know the quality of the players that are behind him. And it doesn't mean that he thinks that he shouldn't play, but I think that almost every player, more or less every player in the history of game, as they get older, they start to be managed. And he is definitely at that point. The question is a difficult political thing because it's difficult for the team because he's the leader, and it's difficult because every move that Ronaldo makes is something that people focus on. And so if you start leaving Ronaldo out, you start taking him off and you're the coach, then people are going to start nagging you about that.
Look, I realise it's a disease to be perpetually looking forward when we're in the midst of something amazing, but the World Cup is like barreling towards us. It's the shortest gap ever between tournaments, and I presume Ronaldo is thinking about finishing in the World Cup, and I presume Portugal are thinking about winning that World Cup next year. Like, if you're the manager, do you actually not want the circus around the World Cup? Are you happy to have the circus now, rip the plaster off, and then go into next year's World Cup with the team that you want, that you think actually is going to be capable of winning in Qatar?
No, I don't think so. This Portugal team, at their best, are good enough to win this competition now. They're also defending champions. And yeah, tomorrow never comes. What you need to do is you need to take advantage of what you've got now. Like, it's, you can build in the qualifiers, you can build in the friendlies, but I guarantee that Portugal are not thinking about what's going to be in the World Cup. Now the manager is thinking about how best can he defend this title. How can he beat Hungary today and Germany and France in the next week? Because that's what he's got to do. And if he doesn't do that, might not even get to the World Cup because his job might be in jeopardy. If Portugal go out in the group stages, he's going to be looking for another job. And what he needs to do is he needs to defend that title.
I'm sure he's being kept awake by the prospect of facing Ireland in September as well, of course.
Absolutely.
087-9180-180 is the WhatsApp number if you want to get in touch with us this morning. We're talking to Daniel Harris on OTBAM. Let's talk a little bit about England, and you talked about the issue that they have being similar to the Portuguese issue of too many good players to get in the team. Still no Jack Grealish, not even available off the bench. I just can't get behind this. What the hell's going on? Like,
I think that, I mean, it makes quite good sense to me, I think, that it is Grealish or Foden. Because if you think you're going to have in midfield, Southgate's decided he wants to play two holders, and the defence that he has probably sort of decided it for him as well. But even if you put another midfield player in there for one of the holders, I would put Bellingham in there because I think that Grealish is a lovely player to watch, but he's totally unproven at this level. He's never played in the Champions League. He's barely played international level. Doesn't mean I don't think he's a good player, but to put Grealish as one of your midfield three, I don't see how that you're going to get away with that at this level when you're going to spend time chasing the ball. If you've also, because you want Mason Mount is going to be the attacking midfield player. And I don't think that England could play Declan Rice, Grealish and Mount. I don't see that is a viable midfield three, particularly given England's back four and the fact that England want to play a back four. So if you can't play Grealish in midfield, and let's be real, his manager at club level doesn't think that he can risk him in midfield. I mean, I'm sure there's also an aspect that he's got good midfield players anyway without Grealish, but he won't risk Grealish in midfield. He sticks Grealish on the left where Grealish can just go about his business creating. But if England want to play Phil Foden, and as far as I can see it, England have to play Phil Foden because he's too good not to play, then on the other flank, they want some serious pace and they want a more of a goal threat, and they want someone you can go on the outside or someone you can come inside. And then that is either Sterling or Rashford or Sancho. I don't think the balance of the team is right with Grealish. I think there's a really good chance we see plenty of Grealish if England make it to the knockouts. Let's assume they're going to make it to the knockouts. Problem for England is the team that they're going to play in the knockouts if they win the group, which it now looks like they're going to do. In those games, if England make it through this last 16 to the quarters, I think the Grealish is someone we'll see in the last half an hour of games if England need a goal, because he can do stuff that make a goal happen when they're starting to think less about balancing the team and more about getting the ball down the other end. And I also think Grealish is a player we might see when England want to hang on to the ball, because he can hang on to the ball and he can win fouls and free kicks, and someone who can keep the ball down that other end. I think that Gareth Southgate is actually someone who might more be thinking about the World Cup, because you wonder if this is just a tournament too early. Because I think that what England have the players to do, and he hasn't quite been able to bed this in yet, is when it does get to the World Cup, England should not be looking to protect their defence in quite the same way they are now. They should be looking to dominate the ball against everyone. And I don't think that they're quite settled enough to do that yet, perhaps, because Foden has only just come into the team. Bellingham hasn't really been with the squad for very long, so they haven't had a chance to settle yet. If you look at France and Germany and Portugal, who just three teams, if you look at Italy, those teams are much more settled than England. So if you think about the team that Gareth Southgate picked at the weekend, no one would have predicted that team. Whereas the Italy team, everyone knew what that was going to be, because pretty much that's the team that they always play. Whereas for whatever reason, I do think this is partially, they should be in a better position than they are now. Like, no one else was picking players that weren't in the squad for their friendlies, for example, in the last couple of weeks. England aren't quite as settled, partly, as I said, because Bellingham and Foden have only really just broken in, but Foden's so good you've got to include him. And they're not quite as settled in having their patterns of play and their ball retention. So what they're really looking to do is more try and protect the defence and then rely on the good players to combine for something or to find the counter. And I don't think that's the way England should be playing in 2 years' time, but I do understand why it's the way they're playing now. And you say that you'd like Grealish to be in the team. Where are you putting him, and instead of who?
Well, I'm probably putting him in instead of Mason Mount, because I'm a Villa fan, and so...
Okay, I mean, yeah, Mason Mount has done it in the Champions League, and...
But Calvin Phillips hasn't done it, and was, like, man of the match, you know, I think...
No, and if Grealish could play in Phillips' position, then that's a conversation. But I don't think that... I mean, I don't think at this point that you can say that Jack Grealish is a better player than Mason Mount, because we haven't really seen the evidence. Mason Mount has done it at a high level, and also he just gives you... Mason Mount gives you a little bit more, gives you more speed because he's quicker and he's got more legs, and he also gives you more options because
I think
Mount can play as your attacking midfield player, but he can also play as an eight.
Honestly, I think I would. I don't think Raheem Sterling. I think that there was a lot of praise for Sterling's performance because he scored the goal, but I didn't think he was as amazing in general play as everybody seemed to be suggesting. And I think that I could have him. I could have Grealish on my team instead of him. I get your point about the need for speed.
And I get your point about Sterling too. Like, I wouldn't have picked Sterling. I don't know who I would have picked, because I felt like of the three, Sterling, Rashford and Sancho, because those to me are the options. Because if you've got Foden, I want a winger on the other side, and I want a goal threat on the other side. So that would be Sancho, Sterling and Rashford. And if you'd asked me at the end of the season, I would say pick Sancho, because the other two are out of form. I don't know what Gareth Southgate's seen in training, because perhaps Rashford had a couple of weeks off and he now has rested the chronic injuries, so he's good to go. I don't know. I think that if you offered me a fit Rashford and a fit Sterling and a fit Sancho, I would probably go with a fit Rashford, but I haven't seen him in training, and I also don't watch Sancho play every week, so I'm probably not in the best position to decide whether he's better. But I can totally see why Southgate picked Sterling, because he was in possession. He hadn't done anything for Southgate that suggested he should be out of possession. And I think that he has created more goals for Harry Kane than anyone else, so Southgate feels there's a partnership over there. But again, I think we'll see. I'm not sure how much Sancho we'll see. I think we'll see plenty of Rashford. And if you're a defender, after you've spent 70 minutes in the heat chasing Sterling around, the last thing you want to see is someone like Marcus Rashford.
Yeah.
So I think I totally understand why he picked Sterling. I wouldn't have done, but he picked him. He scored the winning goal. Southgate won. You got it right. Whichever way you look at it, even if you think that there was a better performance in England, I think that there's a better 11 in that England squad than the one that Southgate picked. but they got the tournament started. They beat their biggest rivals in the group. And you've got to say that Southgate got it right at that point. And even if you think that you might, with all my managerial credentials, I think that I would have got it even more right than he did. Obviously, I'm talking out of my ass. So here we are.
You mentioned Jadon Sancho there, and where I'm just kind of like not fully on top of this. I don't think many people are because we're all in Euros mode. But there is this talk in the background, similar to last summer, of Jadon Sancho and Manchester United. Is this just the gossip columns getting up and running and getting a bit of early summer momentum, or is this back to last summer again, that the talk is very real?
I was told, as I said on here last summer, that that deal was basically done, and then United refused to pay the amount that they'd said they were going to pay. He's obviously cheaper now and less than they would have paid last season. It does sort of look like it will happen, but you just don't know with transfer deals. You don't know with United. At some point, they'll have to say either we will or we won't pay the money. I think it's an interesting thing with Sancho is that his numbers are great. But I think the thing with United, the thing that would concern me with him going with United is they'll want him to play on the right. Does he have the pace to go on the outside? I'm not sure if he does. But what's good about Sancho for United is Sancho is basically an auxiliary playmaker. And that means that United have slightly more options with what they do with Pogba. It means that they can leave Pogba out and play two number eights with Bruno, or six and an eight with Bruno if they wanted to. Because the problem when you just have Bruno making the play is that if you shut Bruno down, you shut United down. So when they played Fred McTominay, Bruno, although Bruno very often made it happen because he's a brilliant player, and the other McTominay is also capable of playing well. Fred is capable of playing well, not good enough for United, but can be good sometimes. And they're around other good players, it often works. But if you had Sancho as well, then you could give more ballast to the midfield because your playmakers could be Sancho and Bruno. And that is very attractive to me as a United supporter. And I think the other thing on top of that that makes Sancho an attractive option is that if you remember Rooney, Ronaldo, Tevez, they were three strikers and they started often in nominal positions, Rooney on the right, Tevez in the middle, Ronaldo on the left, or whatever, Rooney on the left, Tevez in the middle, Ronaldo on the right, just depended. And that would be the beauty of signing Sancho, is that if you had Sancho, Rashford and Greenwood, which will be the aim, obviously they've got Cavani for another season, then you would start them in nominal positions, Sancho on the right, Greenwood in the middle and Rashford on the left, but all three of them could turn up in any position at any time. And that level of flexibility reminds me of maybe one of United's greatest forward lines. And then you've also got behind them, you've got Amad who can play in any of the positions, you've got Elanga who can play in any of the positions also. And you're starting to see something building that looks like something that could work. But I'm sure that there's a lot of aggravation to come with people that can be asked to support transfers, because that United tend not to do things simply. If you look, Liverpool decided they wanted Koundé. They went and they bought him. They paid his release clause, and that was the end of that. Whereas United tend not to do things in that way because they're always looking to save a pound note.
Always good to have you on, Daniel. Thanks a million. Enjoy the football. Cheers. Talk to you soon.
You too, Sim. Enjoy, everyone. See you guys.
Daniel Harris giving us some thoughts there and some insight into what may well be another long-running transfer saga around Jadon Sancho. It's 10 minutes past 8 this morning here on OTBAM. We're delighted to have you with us. If you want to get in touch, 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. Or, of course, you can always get us on the YouTube stream. You can leave a comment there, and we'll get to those in just a couple of minutes' time.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quick Start Car Insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at GetsetGo.ie.